This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Folks, Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 268. This show is about low light. This particular episode is about low light shooting and night fighting, shooting your gun at night. You know, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, I think it was. A very large percentage of defensive uses of a handgun happen in darkness or in very low light conditions. Why is it that all we do is practice in the daytime? Or some people, that's all they do, is they practice or train in the daytime. Well, let's face it. I mean, the daytime seems to be when most of the ranges are open. Most ranges are not open and don't let you shoot outdoors in the dark. Some do, some don't. Most of them are shutting down usually around sunset or shortly before that. If you go to an indoor range, of course, the lights are on. So the conditions that we have to practice are typically pretty well lit. Those of you that compete with your handguns, if you go to IDPA or you go to USPSA, the vast majority of those matches are in the daylight. Of course, first time I ever shot my gun at night was a low-light IDPA match. That was a lot of fun. Well, if you ever get a chance to do one of those, do it. So the majority of this episode is, what does it take to be able to defend yourself in darkness? Now, a lot of you probably keep a gun at home, right? Even if you don't carry a gun, you keep one at home. Where do you keep it? Do you keep it in a safe by your bed? Do you keep it in a nightstand drawer? Do you have a special contraption that you have bolted to your bed and so and the gun stays in there while you're sleeping? And why is it there, right? If you hear the bump in the night, if somebody kicks in your door, if you have a home intruder, and I bet there's a very good chance if that happens in the middle of the night, your home is going to be dark or it's not going to be extremely well lit. So in this episode, we talk about night sights, we talk about a weapons-mounted light, we talk about using a flashlight and shooting at the same time. I think you're going to enjoy this. Just a quick sound effect or intermission or something like that, and low light and night fighting is coming right up.
Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said. Dropped the pot roast all over his chest. Excitable boy, they all said. Well, he's just an excitable boy. He took in the toy.
Well, this episode, we're going to start off with low-light shooting, and John Hodaway is back on the show to talk about low-light shooting and a couple of other things. John, welcome back.
Bob, thank you for having me again. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, you know, I think you're still the most frequent guest, so that's good. You know, I may have to, you know, try to cut you back unless you behave.
You do whatever you think you need to, Bob.
Well, can you behave?
You're going to have to do whatever you need to, Bob.
I take that as a no.
Correct.
All right. Well, do the best you can. I'm good at editing, I'll just tell you that.
Well, we need that, Bob. We need some editing.
Truth be told, I edit very little on this show. I used to edit a lot, and you know, the last year or two, I haven't had to do a whole lot of editing. My guests have been very nice.
Well, you know, I try to. Last time I said some things I thought I was going to get flogged for, but I try to be tasteful.
Has your hate mail inbox filled up yet?
People don't send me hate mail. They send it to other people. I think they're afraid I'll respond to them.
Yeah, they send them to the podcaster saying, please don't ever have this guy on again.
Yeah, well, I don't blame them. I really don't like me sometimes either.
All right, let's talk about low-light shooting. We have three topics. We're going to talk about low-light shooting. We're going to talk about training and a few events and things like that.
I like it, Bob.
But low light. So let's – you take the lead. I got a few questions in my mind about low light, but you might answer them before I ask them.
Well, Bob, let's start off with this, and let's define what is low light. You know, what do we consider low light? Well, I think there's really two conditions that we can agree that are pretty much low light. We would say from dusk until dawn would be low light. And, you know, what that definition is depends on where you're at and which hemisphere you're in. But just for our purposes, let's go 6 to 6. Just for this discussion, let's say low light is going to be 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., okay?
Fair enough.
Now, let's first of all, I want to kind of set the stage for this. You know, and I've said this before, and if you hang around me much, you'll hear me kind of give this little dissertation. The first thing is, you know, as human beings, we are mammals, and we're hunters, and we're sight hunters, which means that we have binocular vision, and we have two eyes that are mounted in the front of our head. You know, they're not on the side, and they're geared so that we can see things, focus in on them, and we have great depth perception and great color recognition. So, you know, that's all great, but our eyes really, Bob, and let me get technical here, and if at any point, you know, you need me to pull over and you can shake your head out when I go through this, but I want to get this out for everybody. Our eyes really have two things that let us see. There are rods and there are cones. Okay,
right.
Now, that's important because when you look at what the cones do, both of them receive light, both of them help us to see, and we use them both. But cones are basically, they work best with our straight-ahead vision, and it's where we see focused things. They help us see detail and color, and they give us our depth perception, and they're in the center of the eye. Now,
okay,
let's just talk about what that means. That means, like, you know, when we see something and we focus in on it, we look with both eyes, we immediately try to do recognition to that thing. We figure out how far away it is from us. We do color recognition. Those are the cones. Now, the second thing that we have are rods. So we have cones and we have rods. And what the rods do is they're good at spotting movement, okay? And they're not very good at detail, and they're not very good at color, and they're located around the periphery of the eye. So basically, you know that term, your peripheral vision?
Yes.
You know, it's like when you see something move and all of a sudden you whip around. Well, that's what that is. That's how we spot that movement first, which is the big picture, and then our eyes focus down on the small picture. Does that make sense, kind of how our eyes naturally work?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. But in bright light, our eyes rely on the cones, and in darkness, they rely on the rods. Now, as we begin in twilight, which is that six, on either end of that six, where the sun's coming up or it's going down, we really begin to harmonize, and we use both of them. And if you ever hear a photographer, they call it the magic hour. And that's where the light starts coming down, colors begin being dramatic, detail shows up, we get wide pictures. That's why everything looks good at sunset or sunup, because we're able to use both the rods and the cones in our eyes. Now, what that means is, now, Bob, this is not my opinion. This is pretty much scientific settled. I mean, not like global warming settled, but settled. Because I've had all the global warming this week I can take. I'm ready for, you know. So as the light diminishes, your eyes lose the ability to distinguish detail and color. Okay. Which means that it gets a lot harder to pull fine things out. Now, I'm going to share something with you. When we see a threat, okay, now, I'm telling you, everything that I just said, our bodies run on autopilot. Okay, we don't tell it, fire up the cones, fire up the rods. It's what we naturally do, right?
That's correct.
Now, having been a MAG 40 graduate, you know, we have this thing called the body alarm response. You know, it's like all of a sudden see threat. Well, what do we do when we see the threat? We focus on that threat. We lock onto it. We try to distinguish, is it real? Is it going to hurt us? But guess what? That body alarm reflex immediately triggers, what do we see best with? What do we use as a hunter? What do we use to determine danger? The cones. And so if we're in a low light situation, we're actually operating on those rods, but the minute we focus down, the rods don't get to be used and we go to the cones. Now, let me describe for you exactly a little exercise that I would encourage you and your listeners to do. And I've actually done this in an indoor range, but what I'll do is I'll put some IDPA targets downrange and I'll put shirts of varying colors on them, okay?
Yeah.
And we'll turn out almost all the lights to really get down to that low light, what you can really expect out in the darkness. And I'll tell them, guys, I want you to start kind of scanning and panning with your vision and tell me when you can see the shirts. And that means, you know, their pupils have dilated. They're getting that maximum night vision. And all of a sudden, they will say, John, we're seeing the targets. And I'm like, good, we're in that moment. And then I'll say something like, lock in on the red shirt. And immediately when I say lock in on the red shirt, everyone's head stops, their eyes stop, they lock in on the red shirt, and I say, how many people saw the targets disappear? And they'll go, happened to me. What happens is they stop using the rods and they go to the cones because that body alarm says, lock in, use the high def, and those cones don't see at night.
Oh, okay.
So what we've got is we've got this thing of we got this body alarm reflex that instantly triggers night vision when we lock in on something. And so what I tell people is if you want to continue to see at night, you got to do something kind of counterintuitive. You got to continue to scan and almost like you're living in those peripheries to keep that night vision going. Because when you try to lock in and focus detail on something, you're going to lose those rods. And they're not going to focus for you. That's the first thing that people need to understand about working in the low light is we want to hyper, you know, look at something. And guess what? It triggers night vision less, not more. So that's the first little paradigm of fighting at night that people need to be aware of. Now, here's the second thing. Let me give you some startling facts here. And Bob, tell me this. How old are you, Bob?
52 okay. Years young.
Okay, let me share something with you. The older you get, the harder it is to see at night. Now, the average person needs twice as much light at night for every 13 years of age. So a 39-year-old needs twice as much light as a 26-year-old to see in the dark. And four times as much to see as a 13-year-old.
So I need twice as much light as a 39-year-old.
Yeah. Now, let me share something with you. Was there a shooting a few years ago in Florida that involved night and an older individual and a young teenage male? No names.
No names. It made national news, though.
But we can think about who had the advantage at the night, the young teenager or the adult.
The young.
Exactly. And so what we need to realize is we are at a disadvantage the older we get just in our night vision. Now, where I guess I'm going with this is to say, you know, Bob, there's a couple of ways that we can go to our advantage. And let me share two of them with you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
One. We begin to train ourselves to use that peripheral vision so that we can see in the dark. Two, we could just use a flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that we might need a flashlight at dark. What do you think, Bob?
Pretty good idea most of the time to have a flashlight in the dark, yes.
Yes. Now, I'd said there's two circumstances that constitute low light. Let me walk you through the second one. We've talked about 6 to 6, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Want to take a guess at what the second one is?
Ask that question again.
I've said there's two situations we find ourselves in low light. The first one is if we're outside from 6 in the morning, or from 6 at night to 6 in the morning. What do you think the second one is?
In our house at nighttime.
How about this? Anytime we go into a room without artificial or natural light, we're in a low light situation.
Yeah, your house at night when you wake up, because you hear a bad guy coming in, or anytime you go into any room, even if you're not chasing a bad guy, you're in low light.
What if we went to a movie during the day, a matinee?
Yeah, that's enough. Oh, gee, and we recently had a movie shooting, didn't we?
Gosh, thinking about that. Bob, what if this? I mean, I know you do some stuff in the private sector. I mean, I know you're getting rich from your training and podcasting. I know that.
Yeah, but, filthy rich.
But, you know, what if you walked into a hotel room and the light wasn't turned on and the curtains were drawn? Would it be a low-light, dark situation?
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm talking to you from a hotel room right now. And when I walked in here, when I checked in, it was totally dark.
Okay. So what I'm getting at is we might need a flashlight with us, I don't know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And I do have a flashlight with me 24/7.
Okay. Which is the best way to work in night vision. Now, one thing I'm going to share with you, Bob, that I think is really, really apparent here is, you know, if we know that we're going to need a flashlight, one flashlight is no flashlight, and two flashlights are one flashlight. Why do I say that, Bob?
Malfunctions.
Do batteries ever go dead?
Yeah, you know what? As a matter of fact, you know what the definition of a flashlight is?
What's that?
A great place to store dead batteries.
Yep. And so what I guess I'm really saying to the people out there is knowing we're going to have this problem every single day, and we're potentially exposed to it even during the normal light hours, well, gee, maybe a flashlight's a great thing to put in our everyday carry and to learn how to use. And it brings me to something else. You know, as I did some research on the Internet, which is one of my favorite places to research.
Yeah, because everything's true on the Internet.
If it's on the Internet, it is in fact true, Bob.
Right, that's right.
You know, one of the things I came up with was this. You know, there's really what I would say, and again, I'm going to go with this for just a minute. There's really about six mainstream defined techniques that are out there. And I'm going to walk you through all of them. We're going to break each one of them down. The first one is the FBI technique. The second one is the Ayoub technique, the Chapman technique, the Rogers technique, what I call the neck index technique, and the Harry's technique. Now, the reason I wanted to go through all six is this. You know, if you don't know where you came from, you're probably not going to have a clue when you get there. And so what I wanted to say is look, you know, we think we have been out here forever and a day, and there's always been, you know, just a mountain of high capacity flashlights, 123A batteries, you know, weapon mounted lights, and blah, 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 blah. But you know, Bob, I did a little research, and here's what I came up with. The very first flashlight was made by Eveready, or the predecessors to Eveready, in 1898.
Wow.
And the first tungsten bulb that made them really effective, 1910, guess what? The first really effective police flashlight that we would consider the forerunner of all modern flashlights that we enjoy didn't come about till 1968. And then Streamlight came out in 1973, Maglite 1979, Mag Charger, the first really good rechargeable flashlight, 1982. 1985, Bob, was the very first surefire handgun-mounted light, their very first product manufactured under laser products.
In 85, really?
85. The first, now get this, Bob, the first effective LED flashlight that I can trace back, 2001.
Wow.
Now, put that in mind that we're talking about technology that's been evolving. So when I look at this, you know, flashlights now are really in three categories, and realize that these three categories, two of them have really only existed practically for the last 15 years. We have incandescent bulbs. Now, you can say this is charged with xenon or halon or whatever gas you want. Then there's LED and HID, which is high-intensity discharge. But those flashlights really have only been around the last 15 years. And so when you look at this and you go, well, so what about the techniques? Well, keep in mind that a lot of these techniques were invented with the technology. So that technique works perfectly with that technology because of a couple of things. How the bulbs worked, how the beams focused, how bright they were, and what kind of hold you had to have on your gun and your flashlight. So if you look through it, we start off, let's talk about, for instance, the FBI technique. You know, the FBI technique, people mock it. Oh, we put this arm up high and we hold the gun out. But guess what? You know, that technique works with almost any flashlight today. If I had one that had a tail switch, a mid switch, a push switch, a slide switch, the FBI technique can be adapted to any flashlight.
Yeah. Hey, John, hold on a second. I want listeners to understand something. It's nearly impossible for John and I to explain this kind of stuff over an audio podcast. So I would urge you to do some searching and do some researching on the different types of techniques we're talking about. Probably they can find people demonstrating these on YouTube, for example.
And Bob, I've got a couple of slides from a PowerPoint I'll send you that have all pictures of these.
Good.
So you can put them with the show notes. That'd be okay?
Yeah, I'll put them with the show notes and I'll put them on the forum. Hold on to your thoughts about the FBI technique and the other five techniques for a second. I want to ask you something I wanted to ask you earlier, and this is probably going to set the stage even better than what you're going to do. Explain why people should learn to shoot in low light and at night.
Well, Bob, you know, and I find this interesting because, okay, there's this thing out here that goes like this. Well, if I have an opinion and the facts that are at play right now disagree with my opinion, what I'll do is dispute the facts, dispute the methodology, dispute the documentation, but I won't come up with any new data other than I like my opinion, okay?
You mean like some politicians?
Yeah, but it happens in the gun culture. I mean, it's like somebody starts in on 45, 9, 40, whatever. And, you know, after a while, you've been around for a while, you want to lose your lunch on that one. And you just go, okay, well, blah, 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 then down this trail. And nothing answers them because they want to believe what they believe. Okay, so I'm going to quote something and then take me to task, people. Beat me on this if you want to. But did you know, Bob, most shootings occur in low-light situations?
That's correct.
So if you want facts and figures, you know, if you got a different opinion, okay, fine. But most learned people will agree with that statement. Most shootings occur at low light.
And here's the disadvantage. Most shootings occur in low light and night fighting, at nighttime, but where do most people do their practicing?
On a well-lit, air-conditioned range or a well-lit, you know, outdoor range during the day when the weather's perfect.
Yeah, and earlier you were talking about rods and cones and how we see things and all that. Well, you know, if all you do is practice in daylight and train in daylight, you're not going to be able to learn to shoot under those conditions.
What a thought, Bob. What a thought.
Imagine that. I'm a genius, aren't I?
You know, that might be a need for training, and we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
So, you know, the FBI technique has some advantages, has some disadvantages, but dang, you know what? When the FBI came up with this, it worked with all the flashlight technology that was available to them.
Okay.
Well, the next person who attempted to improve on that was Ray Chapman. Now, you got to know Ray Chapman was about 6'6", 280 pounds. He was a full-size American male and very strong. And so his technique was he put the mag light or the kel light in his hand and basically put his hand next to the gun and shot one-handed. Well, what this did, you know, Bob, one of the drawbacks on the FBI technique is this. When I have two things that I have to coax together, they get really difficult to time. When I put three things that I have to coax together, well, it's almost impossible. So what are the three things on the FBI? One, I got the light in my left hand, got the gun in my right hand, and I got my two eyeballs. Well, if you don't believe this is difficult, try it in an indoor range. And I've got tests and I've got data that says, you know, I can tell you about what the gap is to get the light on the threat, get your gun on the threat, and then get your eyes on the sight. It's not doable when those three things don't lock in together. So there's a delay. So Ray said this. He said, if I lock the gun and coax it, my eyes will naturally follow the light, and so my gun will naturally be on the target, when the light's on the target, and my eyes will follow that. So then all I got to do is do a quick confirmation with my sights.
Right.
Now, that was a vast speed, fast shooting technique, but it's very, very, very muscle intensive to hold the gun and the flashlight away from your body separately, but together. It's like taking, Bob, it's like me giving you the difference between going, take one, you know, barbell, put 20 pounds on it, hold it out from your body. Now, cut that barbell in half and hold 10 pounds in each hand, but hold them exactly level. You know, our hands, our arms, our upper body, not equal strength. Without locking them together, very intensive to hold those out together. You see the problem there?
I do.
So, our good buddy, Massey Ube, said, hey, me being not, you know, big and strong, little small Arab type, he kind of canted the flashlight head up in the air, rolled his two fingers underneath and that third one. So now he joined those to the bottom of his grip on his gun so he could hold the gun and the flashlight together. Now, the advantage was the light kind of shone up in the air. But guess what? The technology was is all the flashlights were flood beams. They weren't spots like we have now, high, you know, highly focused. So what happened was you go into a room and you're illuminating the floor to the ceiling, and the brightest part might be a little high, but you could see everything because there was no super tight focused beams like we have now. So that technique was a huge improvement over Ray Chapman's technique. So Mass modified that and came out with that technique. Now, to this day, Mass will not name it after himself. Other people have. He credits, you know, Ray Chapman. Now, the next one that came out really was, now, I want to share something with you. If you had a Surefire 6P flashlight, you will notice that there's a series of rubber grommets that come with that flashlight, okay?
Okay.
Now, my good buddy, Bill Rogers, do you know where Bill Rogers hails from?
No.
Rogers Academy, FBI instructor. Well, Bill Rogers actually invented those little rubber grommets that go on the Surefire flashlight, hence the Rogers technique.
Oh, okay.
Now, Bob, let me just say something here. If Bill Rogers thought it was important enough to invent a piece that Surefire gives away with all those flashlights, do you think that using that technique with a flashlight without it might be problematic?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm saying is you take the Rogers technique and you try to use some other flashlight that doesn't have the little grommet on it, it's not going to work. So again, it's equipment specific, but this technique really took the Ayub technique, got more fingers on the gun, and made it faster and lighter with the technology that existed. So, you know, when we say, okay, the Rogers technique is so much better than the Ayub or the Chapman or the FBI, guess what? The technology didn't exist. They didn't invent a technique until that technology came along, and they invented a little rubber deal to hold on to your flashlight with. You know, so I'm like, gee, maybe these techniques begin to be equipment specific, huh?
Imagine that.
Now, one of the older techniques is the Harry's technique, where you kind of come up with the flashlight, bring the knuckles of the hands together in a cross maneuver, and the flashlight works there, and it co-witnesses with the gun barrel. Now, this technique will work with almost any kind of flashlight. It's a great technique. The problem is you can sweep yourself really easy in the dark getting into this position.
Yeah, the other problem with the Harry's technique is because you're going to have a very difficult time. Well, you could sweep yourself, but pretty much wherever the gun moves, the light moves, and you might want to shine the light in a different direction.
Absolutely. Now, Bob, let me share something with you about the Harry's technique that I actually love. Hear me on this. Love about the Harry's. You ready for this?
Yeah.
The Harry's technique is a perfect technique to use with a long gun if you don't have a weapon-mounted light on it, because you let the long gun hang low into the crux of your elbow. The Harry's technique works, and then when you come up, you're basically supporting that flashlight with your arm bar across there, and you've got a stable shooting platform. So
yeah,
it's one of the few techniques that works with a long gun.
Good point, yeah.
Now, the final technique is the neck index. And the way that works is you take the flashlight, you make a fist with it, you put the knuckles of your fist in your cheekbone and then do a full on out normal, you know, mag 40 one-handed shooting technique. Now, the part I like about this is it works with any flashlight. It's easy to maintain. It's not teaching a new shooting technique, and the flashlight is coaxial with your eyes, which means you can search, and if you were holding someone at gunpoint and you look the other way, you can look that other way and see what's going on, come right back to where you're at. My default technique that I actually teach shooters is the neck index technique. It's the easiest to shoot. It's the fastest of the techniques to shoot. It's not equipment specific. It works. Now, is that the only one? No. What if you like the, you know, the Rogers technique? Okay. I like it. But guess what, Bob? What if one day you don't have your 6P with a rubber grommet on or a flashlight that's compatible with that? It might make sense to know another one that works with any equipment, and that's what I like about some of these other ones. Now, a couple of things I want to trek on here. You got any questions about these or any points you want to bring up, Bob?
Yeah, I do have a couple points I want to bring up. I am somewhat hesitant to use techniques where I'm constantly holding that flashlight very close to my body. As a matter of fact, in fact, very close to my head. One reason, because if you're shooting at a bad guy, for example, okay, and the bad guy has a gun, where is the bad guy generally going to fire?
Bob, this is an interesting myth, and I'm glad you brought this up.
You think it's a myth, right?
It's a myth, Bob. Now, let me tell you something.
All right, tell me why it's a myth.
I have been searching for a documented case of exactly what you're talking about. I can't find one. Number two, if I have a flashlight and I point it at said bad guy directly on, he's got to fight through my light, and he's got to operate his gun. And what's he going to do for a flashlight or lighting? He probably doesn't have a good flashlight to use. I mean, he might spark up his lighter at you. But my point being, Bob, is that light is distracting. And number two, one of my favorite things is this. You know what every bad guy knows about the popo? They got bright, small flashlights.
That's true.
They see them break out. They want to go. Do they want to get in a firefight? No. Because you know what? Most of them have never practiced at night. They've never fired a gun at night. They've never fired a gun looking into that flashlight. And so I'm telling you, Bob, this myth of like light discipline and turn off the light, flicker it, do this and do that, I can't find a documented case in a civilian shooting situation where this has occurred.
Well,
military, counter sniper, all that good stuff, maybe. But
yeah.
Civilian, can't find it, Bob.
Well, and I learned something there. You know, you make a good point. In a civilian case, probably not, and it probably doesn't matter as much, probably more so in a military low-light encounter, that might be more of a concern. So, yeah, good point, John, good point.
Bob, let's be honest. If we're in the military, we've got NVG stuff anyway, and it's not a flashlight they're looking for. It's that tiny speck of light coming off your watch or your whatever, you know, that's that light discipline, because everybody's got NVG gear now.
Well, yeah, right. And every, you know, something else to think about, too, this little light that I carry with me all the time. This is 160 lumens. And, you know, I mean, in a very dark place, if I pop somebody in the face with 160 lumens of light, it's going to look very, very bright to them. You're right.
You know, Bob, here's the other thing, and I'll share this with you. You know, and I'm saying this, and I'm going to challenge people on something here. I'm going to challenge you, and I'm going to challenge other people. Quit reading the crap on the internet and try this stuff for yourself and see what happens. Now, I'm not talking about shooting each other, but Bob, you know what? I hear this one. Well, I have the Super Strobe Master 4000. What I will do is I will run up and strobe them, which will be incapacitating, and it will blah, 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 blah. And I say, okay, here's what I want you to do. Go ahead. I'm going to take your Super Strobe Master 4000 that has a, you know, 220 direct plug into three phase, you know? And what I'm going to do is I want you to take this little Surefire LED backup flashlight that I've got, okay? Now, I'm going to begin strobing you. And when I do, I want you to take this little flashlight, and I want you to turn it on, and I want you to shine at my eyes, and I want you to tell me when you think you can shoot back. Okay? Now. They turn on the light, and they go, now. And I go, why? Because the minute I turned my flashlight on, it counteracted the strobe. And I go, really? Yes. And then, Bob, here's my next one. You ready for this? I go, let me demonstrate for you the proper technique for using a strobe light on a subject that incapacitates them. Okay? I'm like, you're the bad guy, right? Yep. Okay. Now, I need the second guy up here. Okay, go ahead. Second guy, take the flashlight, begin strobing him. Okay? Now, give him verbal commands. Okay? While he's giving this other guy verbal commands, you know what I do? I use the strobe to advance where he can't see me, come up behind him, and then begin a handcuffing maneuver or go hands-on. The strobe light was designed for two team members, Bob. And that's the whole point that I get to here is I say, here's another myth. I have a strobe light. It's incapacitating. Bullshit. It's not. And if you don't believe me, try this crap out yourself, people. Try it. See if I'm not lying or telling the truth here. Check me out. I mean, if I didn't know this from doing it, I'd believe the stuff I read in their press releases. But I can tell you right now, we do this stuff all the time, and I work with law enforcement, and I go, let me see this strobe light. Let me show you something. What? Really? Yeah, a flashlight counteracts that. So, you know, that's something that we need to know myth-wise. How about this one? Well, you know, anything over 100 lumens is incapacitating. It's disruptive. But, you know, we have this magical thing that we put up in front of our eyes called our hands that acts as a visor.
Yep.
Like we do every day in the sun. So guess what? Does it confuse us? Does it throw me off my game a little bit? Absolutely. Is it annoying? Yes, it is. But you know what, Bob? We can still fight through it. And if you've practiced, you know the counters for all. What does Mass say? Know where the attack will come. Have the counter in place. You know, when we add the dimension of flashlights and night fighting, we need to know where's the attack going to come from and have the counter in place. But this myth that the good guys fight under, you know, it's just, I mean, it's like this thing of, oh, competition will get you killed.
Yeah.
You prove it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's true.
Some of these things people say. I'm asking people to prove it. I've tracked it out. I wanted the strobe to work. It just doesn't, I mean, you know, if you got a partner and you're strobing, does it work? Yeah, it can. But guess what? You know what happens to a strobe light after there's smoke from gunfire? And at night, round smoke that you don't see the smoke during the daylight hours.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what happens to a strobe when there's fog? They will tell pilots, they will tell law enforcement officers, turn the strobes off because it's extremely disorienting. If all you have is a strobe and you're shooting and all of a sudden the room fogs up, try it at indoor range with the lights off. See if I'm not telling you the truth. I know I've done this.
Ah, very good points. All right, here's another question for you. What are your thoughts on weapons-mounted lights?
Well, you know, Bob, let's go really slow here.
For pistols, okay? Pistols.
Yeah, I'm with you. Rifles and shotguns, I think if you're going to pull it out at night, you need a light on it, period. Okay, let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
But here's the thing about a weapon-mounted light. Bob, I have seen this. I have seen officers use it to search with, and I've had guns pointed at me because they were searching with their weapon-mounted light. Okay? I have seen officers let someone sign a ticket book holding a weapon-mounted light up so the person can sign the ticket book.
No kidding?
Oh, yeah. I have seen people, you know, bent over searching in their own go bag for something, their car keys, as a matter of fact, using a weapon-mounted light. Now, what I'm getting at, Bob, is this. Now, I want you to think about something for a minute. You know, one of the reasons, and just bear with me, one of the reasons why, even when I teach, and I use a blue gun to demonstrate, I'm always careful to put the blue gun back down, put it in a holster, put it somewhere. Why? Because if I'm not careful, pretty soon I'm holding onto that blue gun and I'm using it as what? A pointing device.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we tell the students, put your guns up when you're done shooting, because if not, everywhere you look and point, that gun's going to be pointing, right?
Right.
Watch yourself at night with a flashlight. Start talking and watch how you begin pointing with the light. Guess what? If you attach that to that gun, you're going to do the same thing. Now, what I tell people is this. Proper use of a weapon-mounted light by civilians or law enforcement in a permissive environment. You cannot use that weapon-mounted light unless you're justified in pointing that gun at them. And what I tell most people is, if I pull my gun out, I've got a handheld light in the other hand, even if I've got a light on it. And that weapon-mounted light is that last millisecond of confirmation before I drop the hammer is what that weapon-mounted light is for. It is not that end-all and be-all. And, you know, that's one of the things that I tell people all the time. I hear people say, well, you know, I've always got this weapon-mounted light with me. Okay, guess what? Take it off the gun for me. Well, blah, 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 blah. I could take it off and use it. I say, okay, now put it back on, but turn off the light first. Well, if you don't practice, it's not really a light. It's not really a flashlight that you can use. You really even can't count it as a light because of how difficult it is to manipulate it on and off without lots and lots of practice of not muzzling yourself. So the weapon-mounted light, is it a great shooting tool? Absolutely. But it is not. It does not negate the need for a handheld light.
Yeah, and the reason I asked you that question, I'm not big on weapons-mounted lights. I like to carry a handheld flashlight with me, and I just practice shooting one-handed. I think if you practice shooting one-handed with both hands and get pretty good at it, you can hold a flashlight in one hand and a gun in the other.
What was that word you used with P in it, Bob? I heard it was, what was it? You had a P word in there.
Practice.
What's that? What do you do with, how does that work? I mean, does that mean like, you get online and you read a bunch of articles about it and watch some YouTube videos?
Yeah, it means that you go to YouTube.com and gunforum.com.
Okay,
and
okay.
You watch all you can watch on YouTube, read all you can do, read on the gun forum, and then you're an expert. That's what practice is. As a matter of fact, you can do it with maybe one box of ammo per year.
Well, here's the thing I was thinking, Bob, is this. Once I've done all that, I really probably should get on all the forums and post my opinions and then go from there, right? Because I need to, like, spread my knowledge out at that point.
I think that'd be a good thing.
You know, here's the thing, Bob. Really, when you get down to weapon-mounted lights, here's my cons. You got to leave it on the gun to be effective. It's not on the gun, it's not effective. The gun sweeps and covers everything that the light covers. The next thing is, you know what, Bob, and look, this is shocking, I tell you. But, you know, I have this little rule of thumb. Before I put something on my gun and trust my life with it, that it will work, I probably need to verify that. And I know people who have put weapon-mounted lights on the guns and caused the guns not to run anymore.
Right, that's true.
You know, matter of fact, the small Glock 40 calibers are notorious for that. And
yeah.
They will tell you that. But I'm saying if I went out and bought a new blaster, shot 200 rounds through it, then got me a new super-duper Kydex sheath weapon-mounted light thing, buy me a $300 Surefire X400 rabbit fur burner at 100 yards, strap it on the gun, put it in there, and then it's a single-shot pistol, that's not highly effective for night fighting.
Kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. This is one of my favorite ones. Okay, Bob, you know, you may know this, other people may know this. I do quite a bit of training throughout the year with police officers, okay? And I do a lot of training with SWAT teams, and I have the whole team come out. Now, let me tell you something that happens. We get them out there, and these guys, now keep this in mind, and I'm going to break this down for some of us slimy civilian pukes. You ready?
Okay.
These guys get paid to train. They get paid for their gear to be upkept. They don't have to buy their own ammunition. They don't have to buy their own batteries. They don't have to do this. But invariably, we will get out to train, and here's what happens. Guys come out. They got their M4s, and I mean M4s with short barrels with a fun switch on them, Bob. EOTechs mounted on there, and guess what happens when we get up to the first stage? Batteries are dead in the EOTechs. Now, let's stop for a second. We got a guy who makes his living with that. He gets paid. He can get batteries anytime he wants to. He gets paid to check his equipment, and he pulls that gun out of the trunk, and the batteries are dead. Now, guess what else happens? You pull your weapon-mounted light, and your batteries are dead. I see that all the time on police officers. Well, you know what, Bob? How many of us put our gun in our holster without always checking the magazine that we knew was in there and the chamber? I do it sometimes.
I do it.
How many people put weapon-mounted lights on there and don't check the flashlight every day before they leave the house?
Probably everybody.
Well, it's going to eventually break, fail. Guess what? You know what one of my favorite ones is? I had a guy one time, he had a weapon-mounted light, and he was bragging about it. We got out there and started shooting, and it was just barely could see. I mean, it was like sparking a lighter up. And he's like, what the hell, blah, 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 this thing, man, I practiced, and da, 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 and he's ripping on it, this and that. Finally, he gets back there, he changes the batteries, it's still not bright. You know what happened?
What?
He had so much residue coming out of the barrel that it had coated the lens of his TRX-1 from Streamlight, and all it took was wiping it off. But it had coated the lens where it was keeping the light from coming out. The lens was so dirty from the exhaust of his gun muzzle.
No kidding.
Yeah. But guess what, Bob? He didn't know that from his last time shooting until he started shooting this time with it. Now,
wow.
I'm just saying there are such training and maintenance issues with these things that, you know, it's problematic. And people go, well, that would never happen to me. Guess what? I'm talking about people who get paid to do this stuff. So I'm saying, you know, I know there's exceptions out there, but Bob, it's problematic, and if people don't own those issues, you know, they're fooling themselves by yucking up what I'm saying and going, hey, you know, John's full of it. Well, okay, all I'm passing on is what I've seen. Tell
okay.
me what you're passing on.
All right. Now, John, here's another question for you.
Yep.
Since low-light night fighting is our – we're still on this topic. How do you feel about night sights? Are they a must? Are they not a must? And what do you think about that?
Well, Bob – here's one thing I'm glad you brought this up. Do you have night sights on every pistol you own, period?
Not every one.
Okay. So let me get this straight, Bob. Does it make sense that maybe a flashlight technique should allow you to shoot fast and accurate regardless of what kind of sights you have on the gun? Does that seem reasonable to expect?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know the one technique that does that?
The one technique that allows you to shoot no matter effectively at night, no matter what sights you have?
Correct.
The one flashlight technique?
Yes.
It would be the neck index.
Exactly. And why is that, Bob? Because the light is behind the gun, and therefore it illuminates the sights, regardless of whether I have night sights or traditional notch and post.
True.
Guess what, Bob? I'm going to say something shocking. I work with several gun companies, okay? Did you know that night sights fail sometimes?
Sure they do.
Bob, did you know that sometimes the little vials of tritium-filled gas fall out? Did you know that?
I've had them fall out on me before.
Okay. Did you know sometimes they fall out without advance notice and they don't tell you even until you draw your gun at night?
Yes.
Okay, so what I'm telling you is, Bob, do I like night sights? Uh-huh. I love night sights. I would, you know what? I would put night sights on stuff you cannot even imagine. It would be so wrong to put night sights on. But you know what, Bob? Guess what? They fail, and you can't depend on them 100%. So guess what? You better learn to shoot with and without them. That's my counsel. Because you know what else, Bob? Have you ever had that favorite blaster that you have in the gun safe? And it's like, well, my daughter's getting married today, so I'm pulling out the barbecue gun. And it's got a nice set of Heine ledges on it with tritium inserts in it. And that night on the way home, I get to a shootout, and I realize, you know what? That gun's 15 years old. And those night sights were dim as hell, and I didn't look at them good before I holstered up that gun. Might be good to have a flashlight technique that wasn't dependent on me having night sights to work.
That's a good point. And, you know, they can fail. They're like anything else.
You know, Bob, can fail. Guess what? The one thing about night sights that are 100% guaranteed, you ready for this? I will give you a money back guarantee if this is not true on every set of night sights that are out there. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
They are slightly dimmer today than they were yesterday.
Try it.
Period.
Yeah.
If anybody can dispute that, you know, without changing the sights out, I am telling you that just ponder that. You know, it's like, just know, they work a little less every day than they did before.
Well, and you said something, very important earlier. You need to learn to shoot with both night sights and without night sights. You need to learn to shoot in the dark with and without night sights.
Exactly. You know, Bob, here's the thing, though. Let me share something with you about night sights that I think are a fallacy, okay?
Okay.
Let's put it this way. There is something that happens, and let me give you some statistics so you can go, well, damn it, John, maybe that makes sense about night sights and why you're not quite as keen on them. You ready for this?
Go.
Okay. There was a study in Los Angeles County. Now, they have a federally mandated deal that says they have to do use of force to be in compliance with the federal government. They have a consent decree, okay? So they studied officer-involved shootings from 1998 to 2002, that 18% of all their shootings were mistake-of-fact shootings. Now, I'm going to tell you what that means, what the definition is. And about 75% of those were in low-light situations. A mistake-of-fact shooting is where someone reasonably but inaccurately believes that the suspect was armed and poised and was an intimate threat. Now, what I'm telling you here is this. They correctly misidentified someone that didn't need to be shot as someone who did. They were legally justified based on what they believed to be true at the time. And that's 18% of all shootings that occur, and 75% of those were at low light.
Wow.
Now, other studies put it as high as 33%. And the ACLU says 25% of police shootings were unarmed people. Now, what I'm telling you is this, Bob. Let me give you this about night sights for a minute. I've got night sights. That's all I need. I'm in low light. I'm fine. I can shoot the gun. Well, hell yeah. And if all we're shooting is cardboard targets and we know every one of them needs to be shot, that works out perfect. That's a great plan. You know how to run the gun. You align those night sights. You pop the trigger. But guess what, Bob? We got to identify what we're shooting and make sure that we're justified both legally and morally prior to shooting. So what I'm telling you is even if our night sights let us shoot, we have got to be able to identify that target. And that's the fallacy of night sights by themselves is I can shoot at night. All I have to see is an outline of the target, and I'm on and going. True enough, guess what? Yeah, shot the neighbor's kid.
Well, yes.
Does that work? No.
And you know what? And let me pick up on what you said. You have to identify the target as someone or something that justifiably needs to be shot. If you can do that, if you can identify the target, there's probably a very, very good chance you can also see your sights.
Correct.
Especially if you're using a flashlight properly to illuminate your sights.
And that's one of the reasons I favor the neck technique. It's because, Bob, if I got into my safe, and let's say that the gun I happen to be carrying doesn't have night sights that day, and I have some guns that don't have night sights, or insert whatever situation, and I've got that flashlight, click on illuminate sights, I'm on and shooting. But if I'm dependent on those night sights and they're not there, what does my brain do if it expects those little green dots every time and I don't see them? It goes, wait a minute, something's wrong. Let me figure out what's wrong here. No, you need to focus on the task at hand. Not what's not right with this picture.
That's right. All right, John, one more question about low light finding, and then we'll move on to the other topics.
Okay.
What about lasers for nighttime use?
You know, Bob, I've actually been to a class that spent several days, or rather several nights, out on an outdoor range shooting. We use lasers, and I will tell you, when a laser is properly aligned on the gun and able to use it at night, it is just so cool to be able to hit your target with. But here's the problem I have with lasers. One, they're less than friendly to coax with the barrel oftentimes. Two, they only work truly well at one distance, although you know, if you're on at so many feet, you're on at this many and that many within an acceptable margin of error, yes. But, Bob, most of the time your sights are so much faster than the laser. And, again, you know, I've got this little Bodyguard 380. I was doing something to a friend of mine, and I was playing with that little laser switch, and I was like, dang, this thing's tough to turn on, tough to turn off. You know, I could die trying to get this thing working.
Well, exactly.
You know, and then you got the idea of what if I bump this laser on my holster? What if I kick this loose? What if the batteries are dead? You know, go. I'll challenge you something. Go on the forum, pick any forum you want, and Google this phrase, and it's chilling. You ready for it?
Yeah.
Smith and Wesson Bodyguard 380 laser failure. Google that and see how many people are bitching that that laser from the factory is just completely problematic because of the little tiny foil switch in there.
Yeah, okay. Well, what about the Crimson Trace grip-activated lasers?
You know what, Bob? Here's the thing. Let's go through the steps. You ready?
Okay.
One, I put it on my gun, right?
Right.
Two, I now have to make sure that it's sighted in with the ammunition I'm going to carry at a reasonable distance. Two, we good with that step?
Yep.
Three, when I go out at night, I have to make sure that the grip-activated on-off switch is in the proper on position. Agreed? That's
yep.
Three.
Yep.
Okay. Four, when, Bob, let me ask a question. Before I make the decision to fire the gun, where should my index finger on the dominant hand be on the gun? A, somewhere around the slide and frame area, or B, on the trigger or inside the trigger guard? A or B, Bob, where should you have your finger?
A.
Okay, now, if you do that, I would like for you to then activate the laser and see where the laser is illuminating, Bob.
Okay.
I will give you a clue. Your index finger will be red because the laser will not be pointing downrange. It will stop at your finger that is coming up over the back of the grip because your finger is between the slide and the frame.
That's a good point, yeah.
Now, I got a better one than that. I will share something with you. When you look at, if you want to Google something, here's a little secret I'll find and share with your listeners. Okay, if you look at a Nighthawk 1911, and you look at any gun that is set up for a laser, and you look at the little takedown deal, what you will find is the takedown lever on their guns is flush inside a little countersunk hole. The reason that is the grip-mounted lasers wouldn't point past that little dot that came out, and they wouldn't work. So they started shaving those off, and then it became a fashion statement, and everybody else started doing it too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm saying if the little bit on a 1911 that it sticks out had to be shaved off, how much thicker is your finger than that?
Quite a bit.
Okay, do you see the problem now, Bob? That damn laser doesn't work till you've got your finger out of the way. Do you want to make sure that in a stressful situation that your finger is not in the trigger guard, but it's low enough that the laser works?
You don't want to have to think about that. And, you know, you said something earlier that was very important. Lasers are generally pretty slow.
Oh, they are.
They're generally – now, I look at lasers as a specialty item for very special shooting situations, although they're sold and marketed as a must-have on any defensive carry gun, and you simply cannot live without it.
I tell you what I'll do, Bob. I will lay this challenge out to anyone in the world, and I will tell you that my source data on this is Todd Jared, Ernie Langdon. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, world champions in their own right. But here's a challenge I'll lay out to anyone. Get a shot timer, okay? Take your gun, tape up the sights on your gun, okay?
Okay.
With a laser on the gun, holster the gun, turn the laser on. I'm not playing any tricks. Draw and engage a target at 10 yards and get an A-zone hit using the laser but not your sights with the shot timer. Now, take the tape off your sights, put the tape on the laser, so we know the laser won't accidentally come on. draw and repeat using the front sights. I will guarantee you that 9 out of 10 times, every shooter in the free world who is honest will be faster with the front sights than they are with the laser.
Exactly right.
Now, if you guys want to argue with me, go try it. Put it on YouTube. I'll eat crow. But I'm just telling you, Bob, it just, life doesn't work that way. The empirical evidence of a shot timer and shooters doing this is what I'm trying to share with everybody. It's like, hey, guys, I've done this. Check it out. See if I'm wrong.
Yeah, and what I want people to understand is in a defensive encounter, speed is vitally important. Speed and accuracy.
Well, you know, speed is life. And people say, well, you know what? There's not a shot timer in a gunfight. Oh, yeah, there is. Death is holding it. And you got the rest of your life to figure it out.
Absolutely. Or if you're too slow, then your family has the rest of their life to figure out why you're in the box underground.
You know, and Bob, here's the thing, I guess. I want to. Any other myths or any other topics or any other questions on lights? No, night sights.
No, I think we've kind of gotten into everything I wanted to ask. There's some other topics, but do you have something else you want to say about night fighting?
You know, Bob, the only thing I'm going to say is that there's a couple of points that I want to encourage people on. Okay, the first one is, out of everything I've said here, is it more difficult to fight at night? Yes.
Oh, yeah, big time.
But guess what? If you practice, you can do it. But note with this, if you don't practice, it's impossible. Well, bad guys, they don't get to practice at night. You know, they carry a lot, they point a lot, but they don't get the reps to practice with the flashlight and the good equipment. You got to learn to practice. You know, you don't get to choose the fight. You get to choose your advantage, though. And that's why I would tell people, get some training, do some practice, check this stuff out. Quit reading the crap on the internet. Quit reading the crap in the magazines. Go out and check this stuff out. I'm not telling you the stuff in the magazines is bad. I'm not telling you it's all garbage on the internet. What I'm telling you is check it out for yourself. Quit thinking about it and start doing it.
Yeah, and I want to encourage everybody to remember a couple of things. Laser manufacturers, night sight manufacturers, their primary goal is selling product. They're in the business of selling product. Not that these are bad products, but keep in mind, the marketing material that you read as to how this is going to help you make you a better shooter, and you can't live without it, otherwise your defensive handgun is no good, 90% of that is marketing hype.
You know, Bob, I put it this way. I think it's a little bit different because I want to be really clear. I don't want to put any of the manufacturers in a box and go, you know, they're this or they're that or this isn't good. But you know what, Bob, they're like this. If I went out and I bought the best Gibson guitar made, I still couldn't play it. I still wouldn't be worth a crap. If then I went out and I bought the best peripheral equipment, the stands, the picks, the amps, the cables, the this, the capos, the whatever, everything to go with guitars, and I didn't practice, I'd still be horrid. If I read every book and watched every YouTube video, I still wouldn't be paid to play the guitar. Well, I'm just saying, you know, I'm not down on equipment manufacturers. What I'm saying is, you know, buying a guitar does not make you a musician. And buying a gun and a laser and night sights and a flashlight and a weapon-mounted light does not make you qualified to use those things in the dark. You've got to practice if you want to be good with any of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And since we've brought up the P word several times, both you and I have brought up the P word, let's shift gears. You and I were chatting offline that even though we have a lot of people signing up for training classes, as a matter of fact, it seems like in 2014, a lot of people are going to be getting training, there's still a pretty large amount of people that don't train. So we want to talk a little bit about why people don't train.
You know, Bob, I think of a couple of things. You know, I hear the standard excuses. Let me start off with them. And I use the word excuses because I find so few people who really these excuses fit, but I think there's some out there. So let me start off with them. I don't have any money. That's a good one. I don't have any time. Okay, that's another good one. you know, I don't think they can teach me anything. That's one I've heard before. And what have you even heard, Bob? Let me hear some of your good excuses besides those three. I threw out the three easy ones. Throw out one for me.
Well, family obligations, which that's mainly time.
Yep.
Or that's a part of time. Here's one I hear a lot. I've been shooting all my life.
That's good. That is a good one.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
I've been shooting all of my life. Let's see. What else? Actually,
you know, I think you'd be better at it.
Those are the big three: money, time, and I've been shooting all my life.
I like this one. I can't find any ammunition.
Oh, that one too. Forgot about that.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, Bob, here's what I think. And I'm gonna talk about a couple of these if you don't mind. I'd like you to take a couple. Let's go through these because then I've got some more questions. I'd like to get some participation on if that's okay.
Sure.
But my first one is this. This is what I like. I don't have the money. Okay? I don't have the time. I don't have ammunition. How about those? Those are all good ones. But
those
let me tell you something. Here's what I find. As a rule, well, I don't have the money sounds like this. Hey, dude, you know, boy, you got a lot of guns there in the old gun safe. Yeah, no, I've got this and I got that. And I just picked it. You know, get somebody talking about their guns. The same person who said they don't have any money, ask them about their guns. They won't shut up. They'll tell you guns they got. I restored this Mossberg bolt gun thingy, and I did this, and I did that, and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I bought a new set of skis for the ski boat, and hey, you know what you're saying? Gun training is not a priority. That's really what they're saying. It's not a priority.
Well, yeah. And let me say something about that, John.
Yep.
Go to any gun forum on the Internet. Find the threads that are about guns and gear and see how many responses are on that thread. Then go to the threads about training and compare how many responses are on those. And I'll bet you'll find a whole lot more discussion about the guns and gear than you will about the training.
Yep. Okay, how about this one? I don't have any time. Hey, Bob. How many hours are in your day?
Same as everybody else's.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. The person who says, I don't have any time, I'm too busy. My first question is, how much TV do you watch a day?
Ooh, now you're hitting me. Now you're hitting me where it counts there, John.
Okay. How about this one, Bob? How much time do you spend on Facebook every day?
Oh, now you really got me.
Boy, those are below the belt, aren't they?
Yeah, those are cheap shots.
Hey, I got this one. You ready for this? I read something really interesting. Troubling, but interesting. Okay, now I'm not making a religious statement. I'm making an observation about priorities. Do you know that it said the average Christian, and I'm using that as a, you know, religious word here, not a lifestyle, okay?
Okay.
Reads Facebook more than they do their Bible.
Oh, boy, these are low blows.
Okay, now, but what I'm telling you, Bob, is everyone who goes to training and everyone who does not go to training has the same amount of hours. It's priorities, Bob. It's just a priority. That's what I'm submitting here. How about this one, Bob? This is my favorite one. Well, John, you know, golly, man, are you finding any ammo? Yep. Well, you know, I'm just not finding any ammo. Okay. Well, you know, can you get me any ammo? Yeah, what do you want? Well, you know, I'd like this or that. Okay. Hey, I got it. Really? Yeah. How much do you want? You know, thinking, well, you know, I've got 1,000 rounds at home in the closet. I don't want to tap into that, but could I get a couple hundred from you to shoot? I'm like, time out. How much did you shoot last year? And, you know, I shot quite a bit, like 50 or 100 rounds. Okay, so you got 10 years of ammunition at normal rates, and you want 200 more, which is 2 years worth of supply for you, and I'm telling you I got it right now. Guess what, Bob? What they're really saying is, you know, I feel pretty good having this ammunition because it makes me feel good. It's priority. I'd rather feel good than be good.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, again, it's a priority, Bob. And here's the, you know, give me one, what was your excuse? Give me some things you want to break down on this. I mean, that you've seen, Bob.
You've covered most of them. I like to, you know, I've always used this example, especially when people say it's the money issue. If I all of a sudden next week decide I'm going to, on this podcast, I'm going to announce that I'm giving away 100 free tickets to all of the classes that I'm either teaching or involved with, John, how many, do you think I'd have a problem getting rid of those 100 free tickets?
You know, Bob, I don't know. How many listeners you got?
75. So maybe I'd have a hard time. Yeah.
Okay. Let's be realistic. 25 tickets for 75 listeners, I think you'd be okay.
Yeah. So basically, I like to ask people the question, if I gave you the class for free, would you come? Oh, well, sure. All right. Well, then time is not your problem. Then really money, it's a money issue because people seem to be able to find the time real quickly when it's a free ticket. But
you know what, Bob, I think there's something else here. And let me share this with you. That same person, if you said, if I gave you this for free, would you come? And then they still won't come. I think there's something else here. I think it's pride.
I agree. Yes.
And I'm going to boil this down to, I think there's two P words that are out here. Pride and priorities. And what I'm going to submit to you is there's a guy out here who says, you know what? I'm a badass at the gun store. You know, I am a badass at the gun store. I have read every article Masada Yubes ever wrote. I can, you know, quote every good quote Clint Smith has. You know, I've read every column that Colonel Cooper wrote and can quote them frontwards and backwards. And, you know, he's a legend. And he always goes to the range and he shoots and he does this and he does that. And, you know, I mean, he's a loyal member of the John Birch Society. You know, I mean, he's all that. But what he doesn't want to do is show up to class and be embarrassed in front of other people. He doesn't want to take the chance that everybody else is going to be better than him. So you know what? He won't show. If you gave him a free ticket, he wouldn't show because it would injure his pride. Now, I know I'm hurting some people's feelings and probably cost you 4 of those 75 listeners.
I think you're right.
But, you know, I got to say, if you're dead, you're not prideful anymore. You know, surviving a gunfight will humble most people. You know, if you're thinking I'm bad to the bone with the gun or I'm buttoned up and I can protect my family and you got all this pride and then you can't do it and your family suffers for that, you know, that's like saying, you know, I'm too prideful to ask for help. I'd rather my family or me suffer from a pride. And I see that out there, Bob.
Yeah, I see a little bit out there, too. So we have a challenge for people listening to this show. And why don't you announce what that challenge is, John?
Well, Bob, here's what I'd like to do. And I'm going to put some of this back on you, but here's what I've got. I would like for the listeners, the 70 of you we haven't pissed off yet, to tell us what you think about what we have said. And if you have a legit reason, you personally, not somebody else, not your cousin, not Aunt Frankie, but you have a legit reason why you don't go to training, okay? I'd like to hear it. I'd like to have a chance to talk about it. I'd like to be schooled because if I've got this wrong and there's something out there, that barrier to training, I feel strongly enough. It's like, hey, I want to remove the barriers that are out there. I want to work with people and figure this out. So if I've got this wrong, I'd like to be told. And I'm saying they can call and leave a voicemail. They can leave a comment. They can send an email to the show. And what I pledge is that Bob and I will go through all these and we will address them and we will not be prideful. If we're wrong, we'll eat humble pie. But I'm willing to say, if everyone puts it out there, we will do something that makes it worth your while to give us your legit reasons. How about that, Bob?
Yeah, and I'd like to add to this, the preferred method, because I tell you what, I get so busy, it's hard for me to keep up with emails. It's even starting to get difficult to keep up with some of the voicemails, although I love getting them. I tell you, the preferred method, Mark Vandenberg could use some more traffic over at the Gun Rights Radio Network forum, and for every episode, I always start a thread in my sub-forum. Go over to the Gun Rights Radio Network forum and put your comments there about why you don't train. The great thing about the forum is you don't have to use your real name. You can remain anonymous if you don't want your name out there.
Can I use Bob Main as my name?
You could use Bob Main as your name, yes.
Good, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put that out there.
Well, it's already taken, but... Now, please go on over to the forum. That would be the preferred. I'm not saying you can't email, you can't call in. If you're not a member of the forum, it's free. Go on over to the Gun Rights Radio Network. If you just go to gunrightsradio.com and click the forum button, it'll take you to where you need to go.
But Bob, hold on.
Yeah.
Let's agree that if they believe that somehow that will put them on an NSA tracking list, they don't have to do that. They can voicemail or email, but we would prefer that they go out and leave it on a thread there so that we can see them all and somebody can go, yep, that's me too, and, you know, we can have a forum about it.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'll even start a poll, and people can vote in the poll, and if there's something that if there's a reason that I forgot exists, then you can make a comment on the thread. That's the great thing about forums like that.
And then in a few weeks, we'll announce it on the forum when we're having this show, and we will address these things, and we will make it worthwhile to to someone out there if they can really work with us on this. So I'm saying, get behind this. Now, you know, I don't know what else we can do, Bob, but if we're wrong, I think we're willing to be corrected here.
Yep, I'm willing to be corrected. And we've only got a few more minutes left, so let's talk again about what we got going on.
Well, you know, Bob, let me run through a couple of things. First of all, you know, we have a special enhanced beyond the basics on the concealed carry class, and that's June 7th and 8th at Nighthawk Custom Training Academy. You can go there and register. It's going to be 2 days, 3 instructors. I think it's really going to be one of those classes for the people who say, you know, I got some basic gun handling skills. I've had a concealed carry class. I know how to not shoot myself. Got this minimum amount of equipment. I'm going to show up, and I'm going to leave better off than I came. And, Bob, we're having a lot of great response. I'm going to predict this right now. Based on the number of people who've already signed up and paid, this class is going to sell out. So if you're interested, I strongly suggest that you go to the webpage, sign up. You know, you can do it all online. If you've got questions, you know, send an email to myself or to Bob. You know, we've had a couple of good questions, and I'll tell you something. Bob and I both have answered the emails and really, you know, kind of vetted it out there and answered people's questions. We're interested in you know, making sure this is the right class for you. And if it's not, we say no. And if it is, we say, yeah, let me tell you what we think. We'll give you some suggestions to get ready. And people seem to be responding to that really well.
Yeah, they do. And if you go to NighthawkCustomTraining.com and go to the classes section, we've got a very nice description of the course. And we even have a description as to what you should know coming into the class. You know, this is not a class that has a lot of prerequisites to it. But, you know, learn how to handle your gun, handle it safely, have a good holster, have a good belt, practice in front of the mirror drawing that gun out of the holster without pressing the trigger, and you should be fine.
And, you know, Bob, I tell people this. There's nothing in that class that we're going to ask you to do that we're not going to show you first. So
right.
You don't have to bring a bunch of stuff with you. All you got to do is really bring an open mind, good attitude, and the equipment, and know how your gun works, and we're going to take it from there.
Exactly right. Yeah, because we got 2 days to mold you and shape you.
You know, a couple of quick things, Bob. I just want to hit a couple of things. First of all, I've got a class coming up that's a ladies-only class, Corner Cat with Kathy Jackson, March 1st and 2nd. And that's a great opportunity. A couple of days, ladies-only. They really deal with, I don't know if you're aware of this, Bob, but women are different than men.
I've heard that, but, you know, I guess that's right, yeah.
And they have different holstering issues and different draw issues. And, you know, I mean, and I'm not mocking them at all, but I'm telling you, Bob, I've never worn a bra holster, but apparently they make several different models and recommend some over others, you know. And so, yeah, it's a great class. The women come to it. They have a great time. And, you know, when it's done, they're always, you know, staying in touch with each other. They're not like men where we walk out and go, okay, we'll stay in touch. That means goodbye. We're done.
Yeah.
So it's a great time for women. I encourage people to look at that. And then, you know, we've got MAG 20, range and classroom in Conway, May 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th. And that's going to be a great time. And then, you know, I love people to come to the website, look at the training. But Bob, you know, I'll tell you this, we've got opportunities for training. They're not free. We've got to pay for the things it costs to do it. But, you know, if you're carrying a gun, it's a serious proposition. If you're not training, you're fooling yourself.
Absolutely. Well, John, thank you for your time.
Bob, I really appreciate having me. I guess I'm committed to come back in a few weeks.
Yeah. Well, let's give this – how about if we give it 30 days?
Done, Bob. I'm good with that.
30 days from the date of the release of this podcast. I'm not 100% sure what the exact date of the release of this podcast, but all people have to do is look at the date that it's available for download. And 30 days later, we'll bring you back on. So go over to the forum, preferably, or send me an email or a voicemail, and I'll be giving out the number.
Sounds great, Bob.
John Hathaway, thanks very much.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care. Well, what do you think? Let's get a discussion going about this. Please feel free to call into my voicemail, 210-646-1727. Once again, that's 210-646-1727. You can also go to handgunworld.com, scroll down, probably about halfway down the page, and you'll see a call me button. Just click there and put in your phone number. It'll hook you up pretty easy. You don't have to worry about remembering a phone number. Hey, if you like what I do in this show, if this show helps you out every week, do me a favor. Consider buying through my Amazon store. You don't have to pay any extra money to support my show. If you're going to buy something on Amazon, go over to handgunworld.com, click on the page that says Amazon store. It's the second link there. And you'll see a direct link to go into my Amazon store and buy whatever you want. I do earn a little bit of a commission for everything that you buy. And I got a lot of supporters doing that. I very much appreciate it. And I just had to pay for some more bandwidth. So all kinds of stuff like that. And, of course, if you think you get a return on your time investment every week, I'd appreciate that. All of the classes that Ben and I are teaching and that John Hathaway and I are teaching and that Glenn Tate and Ben and myself are teaching, it's all listed right there at handgunworld.com. You can see when they're coming up. I'll tell you this. The Beyond Concealed Carry in Seattle is almost sold out. That's the one where Glenn Tate and one of the members of the team are going to make guest appearances and train with us. It's almost sold out. We have to cap it at a certain number of students so that everybody has a great experience. Hey, Dallas, Fort Worth, and Southern Oklahoma listeners, we're coming back up to Dallas March 8th. Pistol Fighting Dynamics. It's a different class than Beyond Concealed Carry. We pretty much take Beyond Concealed Carry to the next level. It's sort of like level 2. Of Beyond Concealed Carry. We call it Pistol Fighting Dynamics. My Suarez class, CRG2, version 2 of Close Range Gunfighting, that's over half full. That's great. And enrollments are pretty brisk for the class that Ben and I are doing with John up in Centerton, Arkansas at the Nighthawk Custom Training Academy on June 7th and June 8th. And I also put a new video on the Shooters Club. I did a nice long video about concealed carry methods, and I analyzed some gear. I gave you some advantages and disadvantages of carrying in certain ways and what I think works very well for the civilian concealed carry market. Hey, let's face it.
Most of you know my background is not from law enforcement or military or being a gunsmith. My background is an everyday guy. I'm a Yankee with a gun. I was born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. I'm a salesman, and I've been one for 28 years. But guess what? I also value my Second Amendment rights. So I talk about what works well for civilians, and I think you're going to enjoy that video. So if you're a member of our Shooters Club, that video is already posted. Enjoy that. I've sent you the new passwords. By the way, if you didn't get the email for the new password, let me know. Send me an email, bob@handgunworld.com. We change the passwords on Shooters Club about every 3 months, so be checking your emails. If you register and you pay with PayPal, check that email account that you use for PayPal. It's the only one that I've got for you. And that's where I send out the notifications of the new passwords and things like that. If you want to join, it's only $75 a year or $8 a month. And great giveaways June 30th. We're giving away a gun and a bunch of other stuff. All you got to do is go to the Shooters Club page, and you'll be able to see it all listed right there. That's the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com. And so that wraps up the 268th episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. Also, don't forget to head over to iTunes and give me a review. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.